I'm not afraid to say this. I love today. I feel no shame. It's game one of Toronto Maple Leafs playoff action tonight.
I've been scared into silence. I'm not saying
that. No, I am so happy. I love today. Okay, so one of the reasons why I love opening day with the Blue Jays, right, is because it's optimism time. It's the time of the year that everything is reset, and you know you get a full summer of the ballpark. Spring is in the air. People fill into the stadium. Everyone wants their fresh gear. You get to check out now new stuff at the stadium. It's just the best. And I always felt that way because for a Blue Jays fan for a long time, it was the regular season was the best part.
Right.
There were no, there were
nothing came after.
Yeah. There wasn't a lot of playoffs for a very long time. Now we're a little spoiled, which is great. I love being spoiled because playoffs is what should the expectation. That's what it should be.
Yeah.
But you'd strap in and you would go, hell yeah, let's do this thing. Let's see the new players. Let's get down to the ballpark. Let's have ourselves a time.
We're in
and
it.
Know
We're
that
doing
we got
it.
162 of these suckers. Mm-hmm. Let's have a time. The Leafs opening day doesn't feel that way anymore. Hasn't felt that way for the last couple of years. It's basically been, okay, we're here. Oof. All right, let's get this opening ceremony over. All right, clap. Yes, players, you're here. Great. Thank you. Oh, thank you for reminding me of the trauma of seasons past. Thank you for reminding me of the way that we last saw you,
it
which was with a painful Game 7 elimination game exit. Playoffs is different. Playoffs, I'm back in that same mode as this is what it was all for. This is what all that slog of a regular season was for. Mm-hmm. Yes, there were fun moments, okay? It was great seeing William Nylander score 40 goals. Mm-hmm. It was great seeing Matthew Knies arrive in town. It was great seeing Mitch Marner have the season that he had, which I think was him fully stepping into his prime and maturing as a player. We'll see how it translates to the playoffs, but I think that's what we saw in the regular season. It was awesome having the arc of Ilya Samsonov go from, could this be a thing? Is this a fluky thing? To, no, you know what? It's okay to believe in this guy. He is a real bona fide top 10 goaltender this season in the NHL. It was great having that trade deadline where every day you thought it was over and every day something else came down the pipeline. Massive blockbuster trade. They moved all in on Ryan O'Reilly. Oh, it turns out they're actually bringing in Jake McCabe. Oh my God. They're also getting Luke Shen after no one believed
in it.
Fun. Yeah. That was fun. But at the end of it, it was always the countdown to today. It was always, how many games left? Wait, okay, yeah, right. Nobody get hurt. Mm-hmm. Should they do load management? Once you're in that mode and you're watching those hockey games, it's dry, it's stale, it's nothing.
Yeah. It's been like the last 5 months.
But we're here.
We're here. And that's what I'm saying. Toronto Maple Leafs fans, it's okay to be excited about the Toronto Maple Leafs, their chances, and enjoying playoff hockey.
I think a lot of people need to hear that today.
I'd just like to say, JD has had a smile on his face this entire thing.
Dude,
this is optimistic. JD is out. This is just
dude,
this is
unbelievable.
I'm okay. I'll be all right. If the Leafs hurt again, then what changes for anybody who observes this team? Nothing. You are who you always were. A huge loser. Okay.
We just go back
Nothing
to
changes.
The same
okay,
thing.
No, for real. So I used to have a joke about how I couldn't stand that my dad made me a Leaf fan. Right. That it was all his fault that I felt this trauma. That. I had to carry around all the weight of this franchise my entire life and all of the disappointments that have come with it because of my dad's affinity to a hockey team. I could have been a fan of anything else, right? Mm-hmm. I was a 90s kid. I could have easily been a Colorado Avalanche fan, all right?
Oh, yeah, you could have.
Could have been there racking up cups, pretending like when I had that Ray Bourque interview, like, that meant so much to me. You have no idea. I was a child and I had no real context of who you were at the time. But, my God, amazing. I could have been a Detroit Red Wings fan. They were hot. Could have done that. Could have been anywhere else and could have celebrated victories. Wouldn't have meant anything compared to what it would mean to win with this franchise, with this organization. And what I get so grateful for on days like this is that you get to send out those Go Leaf Go texts. You get to see people in the streets wearing their sweater and say, Go Leafs Go. You get to see the people honk their horns at stuff. You get to see people congregate in the square and head down and all share in this energy that we have, which is optimism, secret optimism, quiet optimism at times.
Yeah.
A little wry smile. Yep. With that nervous feeling in your gut of, oh my God, please don't hurt me again. That nervous feeling that when they drop the puck, that all those scars that you've suffered as a Leaf fan are going to pop back up. Yep. But to me, those communications, those text messages, go Leafs, go, those interactions with strangers, those just points, and the other person knows exactly what you're pointing for, mm-hmm. that's love.
Yeah, there is no buzz in the city like Leafs playoff that, buzz, honestly.
That
yeah.
is love. Yeah. I am so grateful for the connections that I have because of this hockey team. Yeah. And these are the types of days where those connections get deepened, they get forged. These are when these memories get made. I am so excited for Leafs playoff hockey. And that's what I'm telling you today is I'm not saying the Leafs are going to win because saying the Leafs are going to win is nuts. People... Making predictions in general is mostly just for fun. Like, yes. fine, sure, make a prediction. But the idea that that's some actual concrete thing that you can really, truly, deeply believe in is kind of meaningless.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't jinx the team. There are ways to jinx the team, all right? I've done them before. But having optimism about the team, let's not get twisted.
Being a fan
I
is
also
not a jinx.
Believe in jinxes, and I don't like it when people say I'm jinxing the team because... Then I think I am too. Okay.
Big omen guy.
Yeah.
Big omen guy.
I believe in the jinxes. I'm doing my best out here. Okay. I understand that when I got all this airtime to fill and these tweets to pump out, that some of you might just hate me for the long time thing. Yeah, I might just enter your universe, your space at the wrong time and you hate me for it. And that's okay. I will eat that. I will eat that and I will wear that and I will accept my part. Like I said, one of my favorite radio bits I ever did was asking people the day after the Leafs blew it to the Bruins.
Ooh.
What they did that made them feel like they were at fault for the loss.
And you just guilt tripped everybody?
No, but it's funny because like everybody feels like they're a part of that collective. And that's the thing is that we all can be jinxy together. We can all be optimistic together. But man, yeah. Leaf fans, the real ones, the bandwagoners, whatever the hell... You're right, Simon. There is a different tenor to this. Yeah. There is a different depth to this than anything else in this entire city.
Yes.
And yes, this trauma, this pain, and this optimism that we balance it with, that is so much of the sporting culture here. It is.
Yeah.
That's not to diminish the other franchises. They all have their special places, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. That Raptors run, I think, is the most ecstatic that I can ever remember this city. Mm-hmm. And the Blue Jays during the summer months, like Jose Bautista bat flip, those yep. high fives that I had down on Front Street,
yep.
ripping people for hours and hours, just high five after high five after high five. Like, those are incredible. They obviously hit deep, but mm-hmm. that Leafs feeling is unique.
It's different. Yep.
And let me just say this before we get to Sean Avery. And by the way, subscribe to the podcast because there's more in the podcast version. Leave 5 stars. Mm-hmm. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. Reach out anytime. You can tell me your traumas. You can tell me your fears. You can tell me your optimisms. It's fine. It's good to share.
Let it all out.
It's good to reach out today. But I looked at the Leafs lines last night, and I have been just thinking about this series, obviously, day after day after day, mm-hmm. sitting here with it, examining it, reading every single article I can, to the point where I actually... When I woke up this morning and I was preparing for the show and getting my final stuff ready, I almost felt like this paralysis where I went, oh my God, do I even know what's going on?
Information overload.
Yeah, did I oversaturate? Do I know anything about how these two teams match up? Who are the players? What color are the uniforms?
Who's Kucherov?
Who has home ice advantage? Yeah, like complete just brain freeze when it came to this. But here's what it really comes down to. The Leafs players are entering... their prime. Their most important players, they're entering their primes. There's a difference between the baby Maple Leafs and who Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and William Nylander are now, today.
Yes. Unquestionably.
The goaltender, you can believe in him. You can have your doubts, but what he put together this season was as good as any Leafs goaltender during this run has put together, if not better. Mm-hmm. They're 8 deep on the blue line. They've got 13 forwards who can play. They've got more speed than the Tampa Bay Lightning. They've got more grit than they had in years past. They've got more experience than they had in years past. They've got a Conn Smythe winner that's going to center the second line and with John Tavares out on the wing tonight mm-hmm. to start things off. It's a pretty big shift.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big shift. And they've got an opponent that has a ton of experience, that does have top-end talent, that obviously knows how to win, but that the Toronto Maple Leafs had on the ropes last year, that they were better than on at 5-on-5 last year, and that has shown serious reason to believe that there is legitimate decline with the Tampa Bay Lightning. They are not as deep. They are not as fast. They have not been as good on special teams. They have not been as good 5-on-5. Their goaltender has not been as good. Their Hall of Fame defenseman, their stalwart on the blue line, has not been as good. This is not to say they cannot win. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows they can't win, but this is it. This is it for the Toronto Maple Leafs, man. Like, if you ever were going to win a series, this is the one. The primes, the depth, the blue line, the balance, the experience, the hopefully fearlessness, all of it should be coming together now. All of it needs to be there. Because man, oh man, oh man, if they lose this thing, that's it. There is no more running this back. There is no more you can just continuously kick the ball down the road and try to do this. Change will be a coming in some form or another. And either it's going to be major changes to the roster, major changes to the front office, something is going to happen here. But if you were ever going to believe, if you were ever going to let yourself have a little bit of optimism about this hockey club, this is the time. Look at it rationally. Look at everything that you have here. And I know the game isn't played on paper, okay? But this Leafs team has given reason for you to just allow yourself just to have a bit of happiness today, okay? Let the fear and the anger, let the fear and the anger come if they blow it, right? But did you really truthfully watch the Leafs this year? If you were paying attention to this team and watching them through the 82 and going through the grind and going through the slog, did you actually feel like this was the team of years past?
No.
Did you really not feel like night in, night out, they should have been the favorites against just about every single person they played? Did you not feel that they were more defensively responsible? Did you not feel like they were more mature? When Austin Matthews, the one big weird question mark about the season as to why he wasn't more dominant, when he started to rip it up down the stretch, did you not feel like, damn, these guys are just doing that thing? These guys are those guys. So let's see it, and let's see it tonight. Okay, so Sheldon Keefe spoke yesterday, and I do think that... What, Sean there? Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. I thought I was getting a signal from the fellas. So Sheldon Keefe spoke yesterday. And I did think that this was kind of interesting because to me, I guess maybe my reaction to this was a little bit different than I expected it to be. And it was questions about the physicality and the rough and tumble of it all when it came to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And here was Sheldon Keefe's answer about it.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, that stuff doesn't bother us. Our guys are going to stand their ground. And, you know, most important to me is that it doesn't affect our play. You know, that you don't shy away, you don't get on your heels. And I think we're a team that's going to play on its toes and has got a lot of confidence in itself. And that stuff's going to bother us. It's important, you know, you keep the focus on what's happening between the whistles. But all the other stuff is not going to phase our group.
I was surprised that this was such a major narrative. I know that last year, going into that series against Tampa Bay, Toronto and the grittiness of it was a huge question mark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Made sense.
Yeah.
When Sheldon Keefe got asked that, and then like I saw a compilation video actually that we put up on Sportsnet, and it was the compilation of Keefe giving that answer, and then I think it was Kerfoot, and it was Matthews, and it was a couple of other people talking about, yeah, the physicality of playoffs and how they were going to handle it, and my gut reaction was pretty simply, I don't feel that way about the Leafs anymore. I don't feel like they're just going to get punched in the mouth and overreact to that. I don't feel even like last year, Sheldon Keefe was talking about how you should expect violence or whatever was the big quote heading into it, or there's going to be violence, some version of that. I can't remember exactly what the quote was, but he said it and it felt like the Leafs came out and they were overly primed, right? Kyle Clifford takes that really bad penalty. The Leafs still managed to kill that 5-on-3 that long power play. And you thought, ah, damn it. They let this get in their heads, that Tampa was going to come in there, that they were going to beat on them, that they were going to be way too physical with them, and it was going to be just really, really hard for Toronto to deal with the physicality of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah.
I don't feel that way.
Yeah.
Sheldon Keefe answered that question. He went, that doesn't bother us. And my reaction was, yeah, I feel that way. I believe you.
Yeah.
This doesn't feel like you're overly exaggerating. This does not feel like you're trying to posture yourself in a way that actually isn't true. This feels like, yeah, something real, something legitimate. And so you look at this team, and that's what is, to me, going to be one of the big question marks of this series. Goaltending is obvious, right? Everyone brings it up, and you go, hey, the goaltending in the series is going to be massive.
Yes.
Here's what I think is very, very real. The Leafs are going to be better 5-on-5. I do not see Tampa Bay flipping a switch and then all of a sudden being better than Toronto 5-on-5 in this series. Special teams is going to be massive for Tampa Bay because they have been incredible when they've been able to set up in the zone. They've got just a lethal group of forwards that terrify you. You'll be on pins and needles. You won't be able to sit down fully in your seat. You certainly will not be sitting back when Tampa Bay is in the zone on the power play.
Well, every time Kucherov gets it, like on that left wing.
Vasilevsky is obviously the biggest, you know, fly in the ointment here for Toronto Maple Leafs fans because he is an excellent goaltender. He is one of the greatest who has ever played the position. He could absolutely steal a series from Ilya Samsonov. Absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. I don't see the physicality being like, oh my God, Toronto won't be able to handle themselves. I told you, I thought that the Shen hit and then fight with Patrick Maroon was a big statement. Those guys, that Lightning line, they have not had the season that they had a year ago. Do I think that they're gamers? Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think that those guys can show up in those series and be annoying and pest. And it's not going to be the way that it was a year ago. Yep. Having Luke Shen down to kill those cycles, having Mark Giordano here now for an entire season, it's going to feel a little bit different. Having Jake McCabe, who's not afraid of the physicality of it. Mm-hmm. I just think, again, the Leafs are younger. They are stronger. They are not as worn down, obviously, because they keep choking in these playoff series. Or they just find ways to lose, whatever, however way you want to put it.
Not a lot of mileage.
Look at the rest of Tampa's team. They have guys who play with real nastiness, whether it's the Kucherovs of the world, who are not afraid to engage in that stuff. But Toronto, from that standpoint to me, you look at their bottom six with the Acharis. Yep. You look at now Ryan O'Reilly. Look at the Sam Lafferty's of the world. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're meaner. And I think that they are absolutely ready to do this. The only thing is they cannot engage in the Tampa Bay style because, again, if it gets into a special teams battle, you're eliminating one of your biggest advantages in this series, which is Toronto's just absolute factually bona fide proven, including last year in the postseason. I kept this one stat about it. Let's see if I can find it on my phone about where Toronto was at from 5-on-5, even in games 6 and 7. They were much better. They were much better in those games, 5-on-5. You do that, you eliminate one of your biggest advantages. Those are the things to me in the series. Anyways, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to see if we can hook up with Sean Avery. And if we can't, we'll talk to our buddy Justin Bourne. That's next.
Sportsnet 590. 590, The Fan.
Sometimes you just get a feeling. I texted my buddy Justin Bourne this morning. I was like, just in case Sean Avery doesn't show up, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, sure, buddy. And I was like, hopefully it's all for naught. He already said that he was going to come on this morning. He verified it's going to be cool, but I just have a feeling. And as a big Tampa Bay Lightning guy, Sean Avery, guy who watches all their games, calls Kucherov Cooch when he watches his games on Instagram. Mm. Maybe says a little extra something. Again, if you want to believe in omens, as we discussed yesterday, you want to believe in omens.
The theme of the week here.
Want to be leaving the signs and what the signs are telling you. The guy who was going to come on to talk about his Tampa Bay Lightning that he loves so dearly and cherishes so much, nowhere to be found right now. Just saying. Bad omen if you're a Tampa fan.
What are you insinuating here?
Kind of a bad omen also, though, for my best bet tonight. So I don't know about it. Anyways, it's Justin Bourne of Real Kipper and Bourne and of Leafs Talk. Tonight, right after the Leafs game, Justin, myself, and my buddy Sam McKee will be jumping on YouTube. We'll be on SN Now. And then the podcast will be available wherever you get podcasts. If you're not going to do those things live, you want to roll in the morning, whatever. Your podcast, your on-demand person, it'll be there too. Leafs Talk, subscribe, review, do all of those things. Justin Bourne, my good friend, my, you know, old faithful, reliable. Thanks for showing up, buddy. Appreciate you.
No problem, Bunk. Yeah. Game one of playoffs. I'm surprised I didn't get the invite anyway.
Well, you were going to get the invite, but then we got Sean Avery, and I went, hey, this is great. We have to go with Sean Avery. Sorry, Bourne, you're out. Like, it is what it is. And then it was a roller coaster ride from that point forward. I'm hoping we do get Avery because he is a great guest, and he really is, a bit of a Leaf hater. So I love the balance of having someone who really does not believe in these guys at all with me, who is... I am shockingly optimistic today, and I know that this fan base hates hearing that from anybody, right? Like, they just want me to come on here, essentially. Well, actually, sorry, I should say this. Half of the fan base wants you to come on here and be optimistic. I shouldn't say half, maybe 30%. And then 70% wants you to come on here and go, they have no shot, okay? Do not believe. Just don't let yourself be open to the possibility they can win this thing. But yeah, where are you at today? Like, because I woke up this morning and I looked at every single thing on paper outside of the goaltending, and I went, I like Toronto more.
I know. Yeah, you know, it's I really would love to be that guy on here. It's like, I don't know, you know, both two good teams. But, like, if you do what you just talked about and you go through everything, it's like Toronto is a better hockey team than Tampa Bay. So, you know, I wrote something similar to what I'll say now about, you know, about this last week, which is like, you either believe in subjective things like ghosts and intangibles and experience and things we can't really pin down, or you are an objective analysis person who's like, the numbers say they played an 82-game sample size, and the Leafs are better here, 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 and here. Therefore, they're the better team and they'll win. You know, I think we, you and I both believe a little bit from both column A and column B, but I think they're good enough in the objective part that even if they give up some in the subjective part, they should still come out on top.
Yeah, to me, it's two things that scare me about Tampa. Well, I should say three. The intangibles thing is definitely real, but to me, it's not the physicality stuff that we've discussed in years past. Like, I was mentioning this before I went to the break, but yesterday, like, the big talking point around Leafs media and around, yeah, the team itself was about how Toronto would respond to some of the physical stuff of Tampa. To me, like, that's kind of gone with the additions that they've made, with the maturity of the group, with the complexion of the team itself. Like, where are you at just in terms of Toronto's ability to handle the rough and tumble? Because to me, the intangibles at this point are actually what happens when the game gets really tight late, and are you able to maintain your level? And, yeah, where does that show up more so than it is anything about, like, wearing down over the series and the physicality of it all?
You know, I think more important than the actual physical part of it is the penalty part of it.
Yeah, oh, that's
like,
huge.
You know, how much do they get wrapped up in the idea of the physical play and Tampa Bay's this goon squad? We have to – it's game one. Remember last year Keith went out and mentioned, like, I expect violence, and that really set the tone for the refereeing. Both teams in that round one series last year averaged over 12 PIMs per game, which the Leafs were one of the least penalized teams all season. So they don't get to play 5-on-5, which was a huge advantage for them. So will they learn from that and trust that they do have the physical play to throw their hits, to take some hits, to not get caught up in the whatever, and ideally let Tampa try to drag them into it, take penalties and take advantage, you know, learn from last year. I think there's a real opportunity here. Do you want to weigh in on that, or can I have a quick tangent?
No, go on your tangent. But I have something off of, again, like power play, 5-on-5, and that. So does it go off of that?
No, this is just my quick thing. The Oilers losing last night helps the Leafs. I feel like the Canadian pressure of a team with expectations who is starting to wilt, I feel like they could wake up today and go, hey, it's not us this time. Uh-huh. Like, the pressure's kind of shifted. Like, I feel like they've been given a little bit of a, hey, we have a fresh start, a clean slate. Meanwhile, the Oilers are suddenly digging out of a hole. I think it helps them.
Can I tell you something? If that is real, the Leafs are dead.
Because
if they're that fragile of a group, then the intangible stuff is very real, where it's like they're paying attention to what the Oilers did, and they're like, hopefully that's less pressure on us, you guys. Oh, God, no. Dude, if that actually happened, if there was even a peep of that conversation, I would be taking my life savings and going, Tampa on the plus money, please. The intangibles are real. Ghosts are real. Pressure doesn't make diamonds. It cracks them. It's not a privilege. It's a disaster. Shut it all down. Last season, off of the power play stuff, last year in the playoffs, I thought this was particularly salient. Toronto 5-on-5 in games 6 and 7, they outshot Tampa Bay 54-38.
Wow.
Yeah, 54-38 in those two big games where people go, intangibles, intangibles, intangibles. All right, I also believe in those things, right? I don't think that they are a zero percenter. But you know what it really is, or the biggest thing that should scare you if you're a Leaf fan, is the intangibles bleeding into the actual game itself. Toronto cannot go and take penalties and get into these styles of games where it is extremely chippy, the game slows down, and it's always a scrum, and they essentially try to show off all the new toys as, we're not afraid of you, Tampa. We already know you're not afraid of them. We watched Luke Shen just pound Patrick Maroon into dust. We've seen you match up with them in playoff series before that come down to a game 7. There was never a feeling to me of, boy, they're just too afraid. This was not Mitch Marner in the series against Montreal where he was flipping the puck over the glass every time the pressure got too heavy, right? And going, and him, that disastrous photo of him in the penalty box, right? Where he just looks like someone took his dog away and to a farm somewhere. Like, that is not that time. If they are still trying to prove that in some way, then I think they're playing into Tampa's game. Then they're playing the power play game. They're limiting their opportunities at 5-on-5, and they're letting Tampa Bay, who has Kucherov and who has Stamkos and who has Hedman and Sergachev and all of these nasty power play players, to set up in their end and do what they do best, which is snap it around and score 5-on-4. That is where Tampa Bay is the strongest, and I do not believe Toronto is going to be psychologically strong enough at times, if their power play struggles, to just find a way to overcome that. Like, the fact that they're tinkering with it in a way that I actually like, which is removing Nylander and putting O'Reilly back up with that unit at this very end point of the season, still tells me that they are a little bit iffy as to who they are when it comes to the power play stuff. Tampa is not. If it's a power play series, Tampa's in it. If Toronto can find ways to just play their game, stay at 5-on-5, I think they'll dominate.
Yeah, it's there for them for sure. And the special teams thing is fascinating. It's become such a focus, but it is interesting. And I don't know, you may call this a detriment or whatever. It could be a credit to them that we don't know exactly what their power play looks like. Like, in terms of structure, we know they're in a 1-4-1 of some variety, but like, the players move around in different spots. Nylander, you mentioned, has gone to power play too. You know, outside of a play into Tavares is like the, you know, sort of guy on top of the goaltender. They don't really have an easy way to say, hey, we have to take away this one thing. Matthews hasn't scored a lot of one-timers. They haven't seamed the PK and like made this the, they don't really have a way they do it, and they've had success this year. So my hopes is that it feels a little bit less predictable for them. And if it does become a little power play duel, they at least have some more chances to create and score some goals.
I agree with that. And I also think that probably the most underrated storyline of the trade deadline, where Toronto brought in a guy like Achari and they bring in O'Reilly, is that they just have way more, and McCabe, they have way more versatility with their penalty kill. And that they actually made that a priority, and that everyone thought, oh, depth and grittiness. And you go, yes, those things are great. But if you knew you were matching up with Tampa Bay and you knew that was the biggest reason that you lost last year in the postseason, why not try to strengthen that unit? And if you look at what Toronto did down the stretch with their penalty kill, they were awesome. They are much better penalty killers than Tampa Bay is. They have been.
I also think, agreed. And I also think that Tampa has this thing where they, I don't say they expect it to go well, but like, they have Kucherov, who's a pouty guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if things don't go well for Tampa Bay, their season hasn't gone well. They lost 4 of their last 5 games of the year, like, in significant fashion.
Yeah.
He's got the bad body language and the pouts. Like, you know, there's a chance, and man, I hate to ever say something like this, but if you take it away from Tampa Bay early, and they're frustrated, and you win game one and you're up in game two, like, you can see a world where Kucherov, I don't want to say quits, but starts to be a baby about things, and things get real hard for Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
They're champions. They've been through it. They've been down. I'm not saying they're going to quit, but they definitely feel more vulnerable than they have in the past.
So there's all this conversation about flip the switch, right? With Tampa, flip the switch, flip the switch, flip the switch. And I get it. And I do think that Tampa is going to give Toronto a really good punch tonight, okay? Like, I just think that they'll come out in these first two games looking for that split that you and Kipper were talking about it yesterday. I thought it was a good point where if Tampa wins this game, it's the easiest speech a coach can give, right? Where you go, we were just looking for the split and we already got it. And it's like, wow, awesome. I think that Tampa, actually, this isn't even a take, is that they want a split. Like, duh, obviously they want to win all the games, actually. They'd like two. They would like two of the games, not a split. Actually, they do not want a split. That is the take. I think that there is a realness to Cirelli having a down year come playoff times, he'll be better. Hedman having a down year come playoff time, he could be better. Yeah, some of their even older guys like Maroon and Perry, a lot's been made of the fact that their production has basically been halved from a year ago, right? Like, they did not have the same impact down the stretch as they did, during last year's regular season as they did for this year's regular season. I think those guys will be able to find it, and that those guys will be able to compete. But I feel the same way as you, and my God, there are some Leaf fans that are going to be so upset about some of this stuff. But I also think that there's a possibility that those guys are old and tired, and that if they do drop two games to Toronto and they find themselves down in a hole, that Hedman is hurt and he is feeling a little slower, and that Kucherov is pouty and he does have a history of doing really dumb things in the playoffs, and that they do have some guys who, are older and might not feel the same way to battle like they have in years past to prove something that's already been proven, which that they are a group of deep champions And yeah, conclusively the best team that we've had in the, it feels weird to say, but the 2020s.
You know, one of the things that I try to do is, you know, trying to protect against my own bias and say, like, okay, what am I missing? Like, let's say I was a Lightning fan or I covered the Lightning all year. Like, or let's say you and I are doing this post-mortem on the series and the Lightning have won in 5 games or in 6 games. You know, what's happened? How is there a way that could unfold? And to me, the only thing I really see is, you know, like Hedman and Sergachev sift a couple through from the point that go under Samsonov's armpits.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like a couple squeak through them, or like Samsonov just can't get it together for them. The Leafs get disheartened that they're playing well with Tampa, but they can't seem to get the goaltending. They get frustrated and their game changes a little bit. To me, it's the biggest thing, the most pivotal part of this series for Samsonov is the first 2 games. Mm-hmm. He needs at least one really good showing to feel like he can be in this, he can play well. If they don't get 2 good games from him, even 2 so-so games from him would make me a little bit uncomfortable. I'd at least like to see 1 of 2 games go really well for Sam.
Well, dude, so I believe in ghosts in terms of the way they pop up in playoff series, but the way that I believe in them is that when you play really poorly, if you're Samsonov and you let in an early bad goal, the feeling in the arena, how impossible it must be not to let it get to you, right?
Oh, like, God. Just like a vacuum.
Exactly. That's the way I believe in it. I don't think that you enter there and there's some specter, there's curse hanging over them that is going to, you know, kick the puck into the net against Toronto or give them a bad bounce. I do believe in just the energy of a building making the players go differently. Like momentum, you see it. Even last night in the Blue Jays game, it's like Kevin Gausman is struggling early in the ball game and he's missing some of his pitches. And now all of a sudden everything feels like a meatball because he's just like, you can feel that pressure and you can feel those hitters on Houston side going, no, we know we're going to be able to hit this guy. He seems vulnerable and we're going to take advantage of this moment and this momentum. Like, to me, it is a very, very real thing. So you're right. I think that what's so frustrating at times about this sport and what is so exciting and fun about Stanley Cup playoffs is, man, timely goals in this series, it's going to be massive, right? Toronto letting in bad ones, that is where you're going to feel like they're choking. Where they let in a bad one, how are they going to respond to stuff like that? They are dominating a play 5-on-5, and they're carrying it for the vast majority of the game. And then Tampa has a scenario like last night in Edmonton where you're up 3-1 and all of a sudden it's 3-3. You're going to go into overtime. You're going to feel good about the Leafs. I'm not. Like, that's where you're going to feel horrific about this team. And that's where you feel better about Tampa. That's the intangibles to me. It's not like the other stuff. It's those things right there. It's the timely goals and how each team will be able to respond to them.
You know, one thing I will give Tampa credit to and where the experience really will pay off for them is they're so comfortable hanging around.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
I tweeted about the Islanders last night. They're down 2-1, but like, Tampa is fine. If they're in Toronto tomorrow and it's 1-0 Toronto for 50 minutes of the game, they're fine. If it's 2-2, they're fine. You know, like, they're fine in that one goal radius there where the Leafs might still be a little jittery and panicky and desperate. You know, they're just, they've come through in those moments before. They've seen that they can do it. And, you know, that builds confidence and breeds sort of a, you know, no deviation in your play, no panic, nothing like that. They've got that advantage.
Where are you at when it comes to the Leafs' 3 young stars? Because for me, it feels like 3 guys who are hitting their prime. And I've said this many times on Leafs Talk, but I feel as though Marner and Nylander now, less so Matthews, because I think his was already concrete, not that I'm weighing in some of the struggles he had this year, but that those 2 guys really do know their place in the league right now, and that hitting your prime doesn't just always mean physical. It can also mean mental as well. Like, you just look at their age range and just what they've done this year, and it does feel like that actually should be Toronto's biggest advantage in the series, is that they have those 3 guys who are entering what should be the very peak of their performance as hockey players.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. They do have that, you know, when you look at the age of Tampa Bay Stars. I tell you, so I didn't watch the third period of Edmonton LA because, you know, sleep.
I will get to that.
I did watch the first period.
Yeah.
And watching Dreisaitl in that first period, and Connor McDavid too, he's just such a force.
No, like, he was amazing.
You know, he gets up to speed and he's putting the D on their heels. And every time it touches this stick, you know, like, LA's in peril. And so, is that going to come tonight for the Leaf Stars? Mm-hmm. Like, they put Matthews and Marner together, the two guys who have been the question mark, whose point production has dropped from, you know, 1.15 to 0.85 in the postseason, to say, okay, you know, you get another crack at this thing to see if you can figure it out. And that's a massive question, and one that I think you and I both believe that they'll have answers to. They're unbelievable hockey players, but there's a definite sort of, you know, focus on those guys to see, can they be Draisaitl and McDavid? I know they didn't win last night, but boy, did they play well.
You know what, though? This is the one where it really does get to Marner a bit more specifically, I think, because you know what Draisaitl did on that, like that one goal where he turns his body to the defender and he finds a way to dump it in because he goes, yeah, I'm a huge guy. Come get this.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I can't because you're huge. And he's like, that's right. It's going in here. And then he's like, and they're like, hey, you should try to keep Draisaitl away from the front of your net. And he's like, no, you can't because I'm big and I'm really fast. I'm going to get there before you and I'm going to be bigger at it. And I will get to those areas where these goals will be scored. And the Kings are like, damn, that sucks. You can definitely do that to us.
Bad.
And we cannot stop it. It's just, it is what it is. I think that that's pretty clear that Matthews can do that. Sometimes I think he does get criticized for not doing it enough because of his size, that he could do it more if it's anything like that, but not that he cannot do it or has not done it. I think Nylander, as you've pointed out many times, is a physical specimen freak who has been criticized again for the same thing, which is, hey, freak, why don't you use your freakishness to get to the areas that are the middle, where most of the goals happen, where it's easiest to score the goals. And he has done that in postseasons past, and that's why even when he goes into these dips like he did this last month of the season, you go, yeah, but he's actually proven in the playoffs. The guy who has not been proven, because I think a little bit of the size and the maturity at times and the ghost stuff, has been Marner. And so, to me, so much of this playoffs is really going to come down to, when we're talking about the stars and the imbalance in it, like, are you going to get to see the same Mitch Marner you saw this year in the regular season, the guy who was their best player? Because if that continues and you're feeling that throughout the series, that's when you're going to start to get optimistic, not just about winning a round, but, like, going deep.
Yeah. Well, and you look at some of the great players in hockey at his size, like Patrick Kane in the postseason, is probably the model for a guy like Marner, where, you know, it's just a matter of confidence. And, you know, I think the point about momentum is really good. Like, if a couple of good things can happen early where they don't feel like they're stressing out about getting their points and they can just kind of fall into a rhythm, like, the hockey settles in. Playoff hockey even settles in after a little while and it becomes hockey again. So, you know, I think it was Babcock who was saying when he was here that, like, you know, those guys' numbers weren't there in a playoff series. And he said they just need enough games. They just need to go deep in on a run and kind of let the hockey settle in when teams get tired. And, like, it'll be there for those guys if they can go deep enough. They just need to get the momentum rolling in a positive direction early.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. Just, like, there's just certain things where I feel very strongly about that are kind of obvious, which is, don't let this go to a game seven this year. Like, don't allow
you're
that
to
happen. If you let it go to a game seven, it just, you are opening the door to all those anxieties. And just for a coin toss game against a team that's like, we've been here so many times and won these before, and you have not. Actually, you know, to bring this back to Succession, because I love that for all my references right now, and this is not a spoiler, all right? This is just a regular one. And actually, I think you're behind, so I'm going to ruin something for
it
you a little
matter.
Bit.
And
I know, you're too late, but there's the scene,
You can't be seasons behind and be like, don't talk about the show.
Okay, this is it. There's season three of Succession. There's the famous scene where Tom thinks he's going to prison. So Kendall calls him up and is like, come meet me at the diner. I'm going to pitch you one coming to my side and to leave your family. And he's like, as he's leaving the restaurant, he looks at Tom and he goes, hey, so are you with me or not? He's like, here's the thing, Kendall. I've seen you get, let's say, screwed many times. Yeah. And I've never seen Logan get screwed. So something tells me you're going to be the one who gets screwed. And then he gets in the car. And it's like, that's how I feel about Tampa and the Leafs in a game seven.
Oh, where
it's
like, devastating way to leave
it. It's like, yeah, but it's just like, it's like, I've never seen Logan get screwed before. And that's the Tampa Bay Lightning with you. And so, yeah, do not let it go to a game seven. Do not let it become a special team series. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Otherwise, I feel pretty damn good about the Leafs. I really do. And I'm not going to get ahead of my skis and start talking about other playoff series and what it would mean if they get through the one. Like, I think that stuff is folly. I think that stuff is, you know, that's almost like fan fiction where you're like, okay, yeah, all right, fine. You have no idea how that's going to end up doing anything. So maybe just relax. But yeah, to me, that is the every other path to me says that Toronto actually should be much better. Okay, so you and I love the lines. We've always discussed the lines. They start with O'Reilly down the middle. Do you like that? On the second line, I should say, sorry. Not just down the middle in general. He is a center. Sorry.
I find that other people are much more bullish on the idea of loading up two lines than I am. Like, I really would have loved to look at their third line and be like, oh, yeah, like there's someone there who excites me. Mm-hmm. And I do like their third line. Like, I think it's fine. But I do understand the idea that they have home ice here. They can control the matchups a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not married to the lines. If you feel like you need to swap a guy in here or there, you can. So it does to me say the Leafs understand that they are built with top heavy talent, right? And so they're putting it on that talent and saying, you guys produce us goals, you know, whether it be two or three goals between those top two lines, which is a reasonable expectation for the money and how our team is built. If they get those goals, they should be okay. So I'm okay with it, but I would say that, you know, I think when they go to Tampa Bay, I would like to see O'Reilly play third line.
Yeah, I think that, but I think that's going to be the case. It's not that I don't understand this, because yes, it does make sense. And part of me is actually very excited by it, because I'd love to see Toronto not just eke out a win tonight. I'd love to see them go out there and win like 4-1. You know, I'd like it to feel like that Boston Florida game yesterday, where Florida's just playing so tough and they're throwing their best punch, but it's just like, yeah, it doesn't matter that you are, you know, it's still, you did your very best. And we just put the stamp on the series of, sorry, it's Florida, you know, it's not going to be enough. And Alex Lyon can make all these awesome saves, and you can play with real energy and scrappiness and try to drag Boston in the fight. And even without Bergeron, they're like, hopefully you guys get one. That'd be nice. You know, you can take that back to your fans in Florida and show them that one Boston win and hold it up and high and have them clap as you get off the plane and say, you did great. We're still proud of you. And so I think that is the pathway for that, is having these two lines. That being said, it does kind of bring me to the thing of, what's the Sheldon Keefe factor here for you? Because one of the things he did in the past was loading up a top line against Columbus and then not moving away from it. And it was good statistically, but it wasn't working for it was good statistically for that one line, right? And then it wasn't good for the rest. I wonder how you're feeling about him heading into this. A guy you know, a guy who has been a very, very good coach for the Toronto Maple Leafs in the regular season. But when it comes to like the fair criticisms of him, it's usually been by former players, former coaches, and fans alike for the way that he has been outcoached at times, and by at times, I mean like all of his series during these times.
Yeah. You know, I had seen, you know, my concern in the past would be, you know, he's tried things. I've seen him on a number of occasions try things that he hadn't tried in the regular season very early. And I say that from when I had, you know, coached with him for a little bit. I say that, you know, thinking about him going to that top line against Columbus, which they hadn't done all year. I just want to see them. They experimented all season long. You know, they tried every look imaginable. I don't want to see anything they haven't tried before. You know, I feel like the teams that have consistently beaten them in the postseason, you have known exactly what their lineup is going to be game to game. You know, Tampa, there was often question, would it be 11-7 or 12-6? But you still knew what the lines were going to look like for them and what the pairs were going to be like. I don't think the Leafs need, on top of this big challenge, to also figure out new systems, new whatever. Right. Outside of Nyes coming in somewhere in the series, I think they need to have like a couple of looks and have it be the looks they've used. Sure, be quick to change them, but just stick with something you've tried before.
Yeah. To me, it's just like you start changing things when you want to get desperate, right? Not what you would love. Your ideal situation is still having the continuity. As much as we have talked about their ability to be flexible, I think I'm with you in the sense of, that's like a move you make, not a starting position that you employ. And so,
and not the second period, not the third period when the goals don't come. Give the guys a chance to get in a rhythm.
Yeah, and so I guess I like the first two lines. I don't know how you couldn't, because they're so incredibly talented that you expect them to almost have like a cave-in effect. But if they don't, I guess what worries me a little bit is, the bottom six looks better than it has in years past. They have more of the way the Leafs dubbed it as compete. But they also look not, like, they look a little janky, you know, like, Austin Reese, yeah. Camp, Lafferty. I'm like, okay. and I know that'll be the group that plays the least, but then it's like Achari, Kerfoot, Yarncroc. I'm like, wait, do you kind of feel like you're stuck between two things now again? I don't really know what this necessarily is. And so, yeah, to me, it's just like, it looks so great, and it looks like that's what you're doing is putting your best foot forward with the O'Reilly, Tavares, Nylander combination of trying to dominate. But, yeah, it does leave the bottom six looking a little, yeah, just off.
Yeah, I think they really want Tavares and Nylander to work, and to do that, I feel like they need to play in the offensive zone and have someone who defends. So O'Reilly might fix some of their problems, let them play in the right half of the rink, and then, you know, help them score a little bit more.
Yeah,
I do think that if you look at Tampa Bay, part of it is like that Maroon, Belmar, Perry line was last year like the best line in the league by like expected goals percentage. Like they were really good. They stink this year. And I know I'm not saying that they've become different people. They still have the ability to be effective. But, like, I think David Camp's an excellent player. Lafferty's got great speed. He's the fastest guy of that trio by a mile, that Tampa trio by a mile. Like, I think that they can outplay Tampa's line. So, yeah, you look at it and you go, maybe you don't love that line. But when you stack it up against Tampa's lines, I feel better about it and just hope that your top guys can come through in their minute.
Yeah, sure. And it just feels like, yeah, they're back to complete punt from the bottom six and top six score all the goals if O'Reilly's up there and Nyes is out of the lineup. And you go, all right.
They're paid that way too.
No, they are. And I absolutely expect them to do this. But once again, it leads into the thing from seasons past, which is how did you lose to Tampa last year? You lost because, like I mentioned, Joe just put in the doc, 241 penalty minutes last year in the series between the two. Tampa Bay, 107. Toronto, 134. They were on the penalty kill more than Tampa was. They should not have done that. That bit them in the ass. The other one was, that the bottom six of Tampa Bay gave them production. When these two teams with tons of star power at the top played it kind of even up top, Tampa's bottom six gave them a really solid punch at the bottom and gave them scoring. And that showed up most notably with Paul, obviously, in game seven. But Toronto didn't really have it. And I don't see, I'm not seeing a lot of goals from Kerfoot, Achari, Yarncroc, Austin Reese, Camp, Lafferty lines. Okay? Like, I see none.
they're there.
Okay.
They're there.
All right. I hope so. I hope so. I hope they chip
Kerfoot,
one.
Kerfoot had 10, Yarncroc had 20. There's a 30 goal line.
Yarncroc had 20 when he got his opportunities playing up the lineup. That is the odd fitting one for me as I look at it and go, to me, Yarncroc is a really good fit when he's up with the top six guys, and he's less spectacular and does not pop as much for me when he's in the bottom six.
Well, if this is right, JD, having Matthew Nyes in their back pocket is a fix, right?
No,
like,
it's huge.
He did things in his few games where you're like, oh, that's not bottom six. Offensively.
Yeah, but I think that if you gave Sheldon Keefe the truth serum, he would be telling you, oh my God, please don't make me put Nyes in this series because that means things have gone so poorly for me.
I wonder if he doesn't wish he was in already. Like
really?
Someone there's some disagreement with that office. I don't know who it is. I don't know who wants him in, but I can tell you if you truth serum Dole, Keith, Dubas, and Shanahan, you're not going 3-for-3 on, he should be out.
I think that's a fair point. I would just imagine that if you're the coach, you get final say on these lines and that he did go with the group that he wanted. And so, this is his group. And these are the guys he wants. And, it would be really, really tough if we're talking about outcomes that would bury you the most in terms of what you would be criticized more. Matthew Nyes having a turnover in the D zone that ends up in the back of the Leafs net for a big goal. Where is that amongst the biggest ones for the coach? Number one?
You're right. And that's why it's already made better by not starting him.
Yeah.
You haven't proclaimed him to be something. But it's funny looking at that Oilers team last night. You know, Desharnais takes a bad penalty, young guy with no experience. Bouchard takes a penalty, a young guy with minimal experience. They give up a couple of goals and they lose. You know, this is what we've seen from Toronto in past years is, you just don't want to have those guys who beat you, who beat your own team. And, maybe their fear with Nyes is that just what you talked about. They don't want to see that happen.
Okay, well, I'm keeping you for this. It's Best Bet Time, brought to you by Betano Sportsbook. The game starts now, the 2022 Global Sports Betting Operator of the Year. I like the Rangers tonight, +112. I think it's just a good value for them being on the road against a Devils team that has not done this before and that has the worst goaltender and, to me, the lesser team. You got 15 seconds, Bourne. Do you like that pick or just tell me I shouldn't be making that my best bet?
No, I like that. I'm on the Rangers too.
Yeah.
Experience, talent, toughness, goaltending, yeah. You check all the boxes.
Yeah, plus 112. I absolutely love that one. And that was Best Bets brought to you by Betano, the 2022 Global Sports Betting Operator of the Year. I'm going to give more bets in the podcast-only portion of the show, which I'm going to go to now. Justin Bourne, Real Kipper and Bourne. And, of course, tonight, Leafs talk right after the game. Thanks for doing this, buddy. I appreciate you always.
No problem, man. Talk to you post-game.
See you, man. Podcast now. All right, we're ready for the podcast-only portion of the show. It's happening right now. I got absolutely, by the way, we kind of rushed Best Bets there because it's Leafs playoff day, all right?
Yeah.
It's fine. I did not, here's the thing. You know I'm not a jinx because I would not put any Leafs bets in today's Best Bets, okay?
No, I know. Very intentional.
And guess what? I promise I will not be betting this series.
I can't. I can't physically bring myself to do it.
I won't do it. I will stay like a journalist. I will stay out of it. By the way, for those listening right now,
yeah.
Hand over
the
heart.
Hand is on the heart. Yep.
You guys can't see it, but I'm looking at it.
I have the
hand
full
is on the heart.
Scout's honor salute. This is the best I can do. This is the most I can promise to just not do this, okay? Even though there will be times where I definitely want to.
Game three, you're going to be like, oh, there's some value.
I'll tell you right now. There's a couple things that... So, I told you I bet this is such a horrific zag of what I did yesterday because I really like the Warriors. I had big money on the Warriors, and I had big money on the Blue Jays, and I had money on the under. So yesterday was basically like that section of Betano Best Bets, I paid for them to advertise on the show. I paid
you just
for that.
Donated. You
that
donated.
That one was on me, Betano. Like, you know it. You know. I took care of you guys, all right? My friends at Betano. All of you ended up getting, well paid. They probably were going around the office, like high-fiving each other, like, wow, what a day for us.
They saw the Kings close it out, and they were like, let's go.
No, they did the thing, like this, the Osama thing. We got them.
They went up. There's a long pause.
We got them.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got them.
We got a bogey down.
I was like, oh no. Yeah. I was just there, same as him, just sitting on the couch, and then I got sniped. It's the exact same. We went down. That was a tough one, but I do like, yeah, I like the Rangers tonight. I do think that there is, I will say, I think that there's, I did make one Leafs bet, but it wasn't on this game. My brother and I, we did Samsonov, 80-1 to win Conn Smythe.
80-1,
just
wow.
Just hear me out on this. We did 80-1 Samsonov Conn Smythe because Linus Allmark is 12-1.
Yeah, that's true.
Some books have Linus Allmark 9-1.
Yeah.
Like, the path is not that crazy for the Leafs to have it there. So we did make a couple of Conn Smythe ones. Some of them were not Leaf related. That was the only Leaf we decided to pick.
Yeah.
This was actually, shout out to the listener of this who inspired this with telling me about Tavares' odds. And I went, yeah, I don't really see Tavares winning Conn Smythe. If it happens, good for you. Because it was like, I think maybe 121.
Tavares isn't even listed on here.
Yeah,
right
okay.
Now.
Well, either way. So that was one of them that was there. And I went, ah, okay, you know, that's a little too rich for my brother. By the way, always reach out to me with your best bets. And yeah, if you bet Betano, you know what to do.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to try Betano, you haven't tried it yet, reach out, hit me up in the DMs at JD Bunkus. You know what to do. You know the drill. Okay, so let's hit some stories of what we missed because it was busy yesterday. I fell asleep during the end of the Oilers game. I caught the rest of the highlights today. I was like, damn, what a. But I'm kind of pissed. Okay, this is just an East Coast lame-o take. And I know I need to prime myself better to be ready for this stuff. I was coming off of like a boozy Sunday. So like my sleep rhythm is one where I'm like a little bit more getting sleepy early at night.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, having Connor McDavid beat starting at 10:30 at night.
Oh my goodness.
Hey.
I know.
World. Enough. Like everybody in LA and Edmonton, you get to the arena early so that we can all watch this stuff. I love it when they're like, East Coast bias. It's not fair. It's not fair. Then they start their game at 10:30 and you go, well, what did you expect? What did you expect
from
us?
We don't need to work tomorrow.
Overtime? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Although, no chance.
There was nothing sweeter than being in college and having those like Sharks playoff games go to like triple overtime and you have nothing else to do. Yeah. You have nothing, no responsibilities.
You're just sitting in your room. You just need TV.
No, it was your roommates. It was just more time to like drink and smoke and just hang out and go, yeah, triple overtime is sick. And then it would end. You would go, all right, I guess we go to bed. Fine.
It's like 2:12 in the morning.
You could just live. You were going to live forever. You had time. Sleep did not matter. Now,
no,
like,
it didn't.
Now it's like 12:30 and there was no Leafs game or I didn't take a nap and it's like, we're not going to make it. I'm the guy on the journey with just like one leg hopping around.
You can
and
feel
like,
yourself.
Listen, you have to leave me here. All right.
Tell my family I
know,
loved him.
Yeah. I know you want this for me, but I will just not be able. I'm dragging everybody else down. All right. Let's go through the, what we missed. We missed a big one with the Blue Jays. I mentioned the
Anthony
Gosman
Bass
thing. Okay, I have no real take on the Blue Jays from yesterday.
Yeah.
They just got shelled. I don't know if maybe Gosman was tipping his pitches a little bit because the slider was getting so tattooed. Some people were theorizing that. The fastball was getting so tattooed because they weren't jumping on weren't jumping on his splitter. And I, like, Azzo, I know you're a big baseball guy. I just think that was a guy who didn't have command, and they knew he was going to have to throw meatballs. And then whenever he would throw his fastball, they were like, merci beaucoup. We're going to put this into the stratosphere.
This.
Like, I don't think that was a tipping pitches issue. I think that was just command issue.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's true. And then, like you said, when you're off with that one pitch, those guys just sit on the other ones and you're in for a rough night.
And that's
Shai
it.
Wrote about it himself. He said, you know, it's not typical Gosman, so don't get used to it. I don't think you worry until you see a couple starts like that.
No, I'm not worried about it at all. I just, it's like you could just tell that they were not going to swing at anything because he kept putting himself into damaging counts.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, yeah, you don't have your command, so we're going to let you pitch for a couple of here. You're going to put yourself in a fastball counts, and then we're going to sit on those, and we're going to rocket them. Yeah. And so it wasn't, to me, like a tipping pitches thing. It was just, hey, we know you don't have the command. We know you're shaky with
just
the
got
walks.
Shelled.
And that's what I mean about confidence mattering to me, is like so much of being a pitcher with command to me is confidence and your ability to make those pitches. And that's what I'm saying about what is clutch and what isn't, and momentum being real is like that is how momentum makes itself present. That's what I'm talking about with the Leaf stuff. Anyways, that was not the big Blue Jays news. Was Kevin Gosman.
Yes.
The big Blue Jays news was Anthony Bass.
Was Anthony Bass on Twitter. So 2 days ago, he tweeted out a picture of his two daughters on a plane, and they were on their iPads with their headphones, and there was some popcorn on the ground. And he said, the flight attendant at United just made my 22-week pregnant wife traveling with a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old get on her hands and knees to pick up the popcorn mess by my youngest daughter. Are you kidding me? And then a bunch of exclamation points and question marks. And then somebody replied and said that be a decent human, and if you're going to give your kid popcorn on the plane, be prepared to pick it up.
Yeah, there's thousands of replies, Jim.
Then he replied to that
and
said, you're the perfect parent. You can do no wrong.
Yeah, he's triggered.
Yeah, so he went on a tangent and said, like, she is permitted to fly because somebody got mad that, like, why are you letting your wife fly?
Okay, that's it.
It's
too much.
I know. It was completely off the rails, and then he yesterday tweeted, thank you, everyone, for your support. United Airlines is taking care of matters with the flight attendant internally.
Okay, so...
Which sounds like a almost like he's trying to get.
So the question here
first
is
one reply I want to jump in and say is he said United provided the kids with the popcorn.
Yeah,
it wasn't his
he
family.
Did sure. So the question here is who's wrong, who's right?
Yeah, whose side are you on?
And I would like to say
debate.
I am on the fence. Okay, everyone. No, I'm not. Actually, I'm not even on the fence. I'm very, very strong in my position that I would agree with either side if it was me. Like
see
kids making a mess on a plane. And the United lady brings over the bag to say to somebody, clean up after your kids. I'm with the United people going, yeah, pick it up. You don't just get to make a mess and then boot it like that. Like, whatever. And Bass was, it's a little dramatic. He's like, and my wife is down on her hands and knees crying. And you're like, okay. I will say that it's a bit of a tough look for the people from United being like, hey, pregnant lady, pick it up. It's like they are going to clean it. So... that's why it's like, for me, if it's me in my shoes and I'm having popcorn and there's a couple of kernels on the ground, and granted, I'm sure there was, like, I saw the picture, there was a bunch, it was pretty messy or whatever. And then I think you should clean up after yourself, okay? Like, especially on a flight, there's like one place where you don't have to clean up for yourself, and that's at the ballpark where it's like, I have peanuts and I have seeds
everywhere.
I'll spit, I'll do everything, it'll be trash. I had people walking through my peanut shells at the Blue Jays game the other night, and it's like, I don't care. I'll kick them everywhere, I'll make a mess, I'll leave all my beer cans down here. That's fine. You're allowed to do that. You're encouraged, in fact, to do that. Donovan Bennett's most insane take is that he cleans up after himself at the ballpark. And I'm like, what? That's
nuts.
Like, yeah, it's no, that's the half of the fun of being there. Like, I used to go to minor league parks. I used to go to minor league parks with Chew and just spit on the ground right in front of me, just dipping and just right in front of
the
me.
World's
in
the world's biggest garbage can.
Just garbage and just not caring at all. Like, dude, who cares? That was a little too far, okay? I don't advise to chew at the ballpark and spit on the... That's too much. That's too much. But my point here is that if it was me and United came up to me and said, here's a garbage bag, pick up after yourself, I would lose my mind. I would be so mad. My whole thought process would just be, you're not allowed to express yourself in a meaningful way because otherwise some air marshal is going to come on here and you're going to be that guy who cried on the plane the other day where he's like,
oh, yeah, the guy who didn't get the gin and tonic and they dragged him off the flight.
That would be me. Here's what I will say, though, conclusively. I agree. I understand Bass sticking up for his wife, and I think that she is in the right to feel aggrieved. I think that the United people and all the people that are saying pick up after your kids, and like I saw all the replies of people with like multiple kids on a plane going, I pick up after them. And it's like, okay, whatever. But you know why this happens? Is because people bitching on Twitter at companies, especially airline stuff, when we all know that airlines are... You're stressed out. It's not going to be usually a good day. You're just hoping for nothing to happen, right?
You're like, going to be tired.
There's no thing that happens on flights where you're like, wow, like what an awesome time we had. You fantasize about it. Like one of the funniest things about being a guy is falling in love in the airport and falling in love in planes and like having these fantasies. You're going to meet your wife getting on a plane. We all do it.
And you're sat next to the same woman.
It's like one of my favorite memes
dude,
right
girl
now.
Who sit, the girl that you see at the airport. Love of your life. Love of your life.
I just died in your arms tonight. You just see it.
You got like R&B in your ears and you see some girl walk past you. It's like about your age.
You just, you can see a life with her. You know, it's just, you're ready.
I bet she'd be a good mother.
Dude, the most ready I've ever been in my life to get married is at airports.
Yeah.
Seeing random women.
You're like jet lagged, sleep deprived.
Doesn't
you're
matter.
Like, I'm in love with her.
And the idea when you see them like, oh my God, you're taking the same plane as me. We're going to sit together. And then they sit like a million miles away and you just sit next to them.
Oh, you're in first class? Okay, never mind. I'll be at the very back.
Some guy's like, I'm going to fart next to you. Like, yeah, I know. I'll fart
Some guy's spilling into your seat.
I will like, also fart on here with you. Anyway, so I understand the position of the family. I understand the position of the airline. I will say that him saying that they're taking matters into the hands of like that
internally.
He's like, oh,
they're handling
her.
It internally.
She might get fired like from that. Her airline job. I'm like, oh, Anthony.
Yeah, that's bad.
Anthony.
The ratio on that tweet was
that's bad.
Dude, unbelievable.
This is just shows you though, again, the confidence of some athletes and millionaires where they're just like, yeah, shut up.
Yeah.
We don't care. I got her. And he's like announcing it to everyone. He's like, thank you, United. Thank you for dealing with her
internally. Like,
sucks, man. Yeah. That just sucks. Because again, I just think that unless you do something like egregious as an employee of something, like, you know, you obviously put your hands on somebody or you are vile to someone.
Yeah, outwardly rude or whatever.
Like,
there's
common sense, really.
Even rudeness, like, that's whatever. That's just, okay, you were a little rude to each other. All right, can we just not get the authority figures involved here? Like, does this have to be, do we have to escalate this situation? And so to me, that's the lame part here is that you want retribution against a stewardess who you have no idea what she was going through that day or like what happened during her. It's just lame to me that you would want her fired. And I think that's a crappy thing that we do now in society is like, it used to be the most embarrassing thing that you would see in like a movie of like a rich villain going like, this person would be fired because they made a mistake. They spilled my soup. And now we all think we're that person because we have social media and we're like, oh, anything bad happens to us and we will go to the Twitter and we will let them know that we will not stand for this. We want a DM from you to apologize to us and have this person dealt with internally. Like
that's the worst thing on Twitter when like you see like a picture of like an employee from a store and then like all the comments being like, this person did this to me. And I'm like, okay, he was a little bit rude. Like, why are you putting his picture on social media and blowing it up everywhere?
And I understand the temptation of it, okay? When we get pissed off in these situations, you kind of see red for a little while.
Yeah, you want to vent a little bit.
The fact that he did that, like, sleeping on it and has continued to do it.
It was a whole day later.
That's never really backed down, eh?
Yeah, that's the part of it where you go, dude.
Yeah, it was a whole day later.
Dude, you slept on this.
And so you made the right point of, like, here's the thing, man. A travel day is the worst day for everybody.
Yes.
Everybody's just trying to get on the plane and get through it. And my thing is like the reason that I'm kind of pro flight attendant in this is like I was a server bartender forever for like years and years. And there is nothing worse than like serving a family who brings in a tiny kid and they're just treating it like it's like
that they're just like, don't worry, I'm going to get out of here and like,
we're just
screw
like
you.
Ripping napkins up, throwing like garbage everywhere.
No, dude, okay. There is a small implication when you go to these places where it's like, someone might clean up after you, but when you rub it in someone's face, like a server or an airline attendant like that, you're a piece of trash.
Yeah.
Like that's a trash move to be like, what? That's your job. It's like, oh, cool. You've broken the covenant. You've broken the unspoken code of do not do that. So I just think, again, there's ways to be a decent person. I think that, if you're the stewardesses, as soon as this lady who's pregnant is like, yo, I really like, she just gives like a little bit of an effort to put a couple popcorn kernels in the bag, you should feel bad. But the second she's just like, the audacity, my husband will be, you'll be hearing about this. Like, don't you think that's probably what happened here? Like, they just come out of the blue and hand her a garbage bag and go like, here, lady, pick this up, you know? And then she was crying and they were like,
it was also probably way less dramatic than it sounded.
We gave
in the
her
tweet
that
too.
Popcorn and now we're making her clean it up. What an idiot. Yeah, like obviously there's some nuance here that gets lost. I just, to me, when you're complaining, the number one L that I can't relate with is the Bass part of it where he takes it into day two and is like, I'm hoping she got fired from her job.
Yeah, that's tough.
As I make millions of dollars as a professional athlete. It's like,
Did you see he checked into the game last night, Anthony Bass did, and the Astros broadcast said, Anthony Bass on to try and clean it up.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, but guess what? That's where you open yourself up to those jokes.
Yeah.
The popcorn jokes are going to be everywhere.
Here's the thing. I understand Bass seeing red. He hears from his wife. She's crying.
Of course.
And he's like, I'll do anything. Like, I get his initial position. We all make the mistake of going to Twitter and saying stupid stuff on there and, like, you know, making our problems bigger than they need to be. Like, again, as much as it sucked in that moment, as mad as you were, your wife picking up some popcorn on a plane is not exactly like she's in the Ukraine with candlelight.
I was wondering where this was going to go.
You know, it just, all right. Some perspective does matter when you go, like, that is usually the way I'll check myself when I'm super pissed about some of these things. And I think about what I'm going to do here is like, hey, imagine all the problems people are having in their day-to-day lives. And now you're coming here with like popcorn pickup on the plane and you're like, oof, okay. Yeah. Let's put the phone down. Maybe
perspective is so important
for sure. But you do want to stick up for your wife. So I get his part of it there. Yeah. It's just like taking it into day two. And doing the, like, we got her.
If it was knee-jerk on Twitter right away, then it's like, okay, he comes back, he's like, sorry, I was hot-headed.
That's what I'm saying. It's just, it's
then it would be.
Take it too far. Anyways, all right, what's next? We did
hammer that story. Yeah,
pretty sure Anthony Bass will never be doing this podcast.
That was pretty good. The Kings.
Still a fan, Anthony Bass, just wants to stay.
Oh, yeah.
Austin from the back
Austin,
row.
This is not, anyway.
The Kings, they lit the beam again. Yeah. It's the series of the NBA playoffs so far. Kings Warriors, Steph Curry down 2-0 in a series for the first time in his career.
Mm-hmm. That's a crazy stat. Yeah. That's an unbelievable stat.
De'Aaron Fox was awesome again, but the story, of course, out of this is Draymond versus DeMontis Sabonis. Fourth quarter, DeMontis grabbed onto Draymond's leg. Mm-hmm. Draymond responded by stomping on him in the chest. Mm-hmm. DeMontis kind of reacted like his chest had been caved
in. Dude, the lamest thing, the lamest thing ever was Wojnarowski tweeting he's having x-rays on his lungs and ribs. And I was like, okay. I know you're trying to get him suspended, but it's like, Bass follow-up tweet, most cringe in the last 24 hours. Number two was Woj getting pressed by someone in the Kings front office to be like, hey,
can you report that his lungs are in danger?
Just letting
you
know we're x-raying his lungs.
Well, then I saw Draymond got an x-ray on his ankle.
Yeah, that's
so.
Not for serious?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's really pathetic.
Anyway, I mean, Draymond at it again. We've got some sound, from Draymond
He got suspended, or he got ejected, and I don't know, maybe he'll get suspended here. Here's what he had to say post-game.
My leg got grabbed. Yeah. Second time in two nights.
Love that.
Referees just watching.
Yeah, they do.
I got to land my foot somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the most flexible person, so it's not stretching that far. I can only step so far and pulling my leg away, so.
Yeah, okay, so. This is a two wrongs don't make a right. Clearly, Sabonis grabs his leg.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know about the second time in two nights thing. I don't remember him getting his leg grabbed or whatever.
I don't remember it from the first night. I think he's talking about in the first game when they like bowled over
else.
Each other.
Yeah, yeah. It was somebody else and whatever. It is what it is. Draymond.
He also put it on his Instagram story, too. No,
what did he say?
He tweeted out a picture of the photo of, like, Sabonis grabbing his leg, and he's like, solid basketball play. Yeah, nothing wrong here.
Okay. I relate to both these guys in this situation again in that if I was playing in this basketball game and someone's leg comes in there, I would be the kind of rat who would grab someone's leg and hold them back from a transition bucket for a second. And I'm also the kind of person who, if they did grab my leg, I would act as though it was the worst thing that ever happened to me.
Boot him in the head. And that
you've been both sides in both of these.
Because again,
you're an experienced person here. Like, what's going on?
It's like, I can be a piece of garbage from a lot of angles, guys. I'm not just one faceted piece of garbage. I got lots of different garbagey angles.
You're on both sides of the plane story, both sides of this.
So this is where I'm at with this. It's like, okay, he clearly stomps.
Oh, yeah. There's no denying it.
Yep. He's done for a game. There's no shot he's not done for a game.
Correct.
Like, he absolutely unequivocally has to be. So, yes, he's right. He grabs his leg, and if he kind of half kicks him just a little bit, or he reacts a little with a stare or something, or even, like, maybe even shoves him a little bit, it's probably like, hey, we let this go. Sabonis was in the wrong to grab him, but not in the wrong in a sense of something that was so really out of the ordinary of just kind of a small cheap shot play. Draymond tries to stomp his chest. And in fact, like, you can tell he's almost like going to kill him. And then he's like, right, I'm 260 pounds and I'll collapse his chest cavity.
There are a lot of cameras out here.
I'm on national television.
I'm also the guy who put my own teammate in the hospital earlier this year by chin checking him in a practice. So maybe having two assaults on camera in 1 year is too many assaults on camera in 1 year. Draymond, I'm sorry. This is a reputation play. If this was Steph Curry that did the half stomp, people might go, you're the guy who's kicked people in the nuts, punched people in the face. Mm-hmm. You're stomping Sabonis in the chest. You got to get a game here. I think it should just be one game.
It's just one game.
Yeah, but here's the interesting part of it is that it's like, he does have a lot of precedent.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're the league, and this is a guy who did punch his teammate in the face before the season started, how does it look if you're like, it's not a big deal that the guy who's always violent was violent again, and we're giving him a game? So they are kind of in a tricky position with this one. It absolutely cannot be no games. That's crazy.
It has to be at least one.
That's crazy. But it's like, if precedent is supposed to matter and you're a repeat offender, that's the thing. You're supposed to get more stringent. So it's like, in a vacuum, this should be max one game, right? Even not for certain players. But in the Draymond Green precedent universe.
In the multiverse of Draymond Green.
This could go into a lot of different places. I'm not trying to be like a baby about this. I don't think it was that big of a deal. Like, these two guys that got heated, it was this.
Yeah, it was an
the
emotional reaction.
The only reason it's any kind of a deal to me is that it's a huge guy, Draymond, who could have, who gave him a bit of a stomp. And you go, dude, you can't stomp, all right?
Yeah.
Like, we already had Hainsworth. We already learned about stomping from Albert Hainsworth. Stomping is done. RIP stomping, thanks to Albert Hainsworth, who would just scuff people. Boy, oh boy, Austin's
all-time
guy.
All-time Titans great. Yeah, DT, yeah. Loved him.
All-time scumbag, Albert Hainsworth.
That's Austin's type of player.
He's on the athlete in-game scum Mount Rushmore. There's no doubt about it.
I like they don't give Ndamukong and Sue there, though. Just go right to Hainsworth.
Sue
because Hainsworth is the
well.
OG.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That face stomp was like one of the grossest things that's ever happened, man.
Dude, that was like the worst thing.
That face stomp. It's like Albert Hainsworth, 320 pounds.
Jail maybe for that. But.
Yeah, that's dude, jail.
It was like, if we're talking about face stomps, it's like American History X number one and Albert Hainsworth number two in terms of like most vicious ones you've ever seen. And one is in a movie. Like, it's fake. Albert Hainsworth went for the real life. Like, no, you cannot be having that. Anyway, so yeah, I think Draymond gets a game. And I will say this. I saw today with, again, a shout out to our friends from Botano, that to win the series, the Kings are minus 154.
Light the beam,
not
baby.
Not to curse the beam, but that is an insane value play for up 2-0, potentially no Draymond going in game three.
Yeah.
And yeah, Warriors team that didn't look very good. Kings
can't
defense.
Stop them. Yeah, the Warriors can't stop them.
Sacramento, their home crowd is electric. It's so fun watching their games.
I'm back on. I just want to say I'm sorry that I ever said I left the. I know he's back on. I know they won't let me
he's
back.
Back.
I know some people won't let me back in the stadium. I'm like those Miami Heat fans that left the stadium and I'm like banging on the door. So let me back in. I get it. Like, I understand why I'm not allowed
back
before
in. Ray Allen hit the shot.
I understand why I'm not going to actually be a ceremonial like the Beamer. Like, I know they won't let me press the button.
You're never gonna.
No, I know. I know that now. And I know even if I show up my receipts of like my Jason Williams jersey that's way too tight now. I know if I show up with that stuff, they won't let me light the beam. But I'm just saying that even though it could have been LeBron Curry, I love the Kangs. I did find myself watching the game going, go Kangs, you know, just like,
I'll delete all the clips.
No, it's fine. Thank you, Jobbo. Delete the evidence. Yes.
Delete all the evidence.
Shred the papers.
They have the audio, but they can't prove it's
shred the paper. Shred the papers. All right. What's next?
So, also NBA, Joel Embiid had some comments last night about
this is so good.
So over the weekend, Nets head coach Jacques Vaughn had some comments about
Jacques Vaughn
begging for calls in game one. And last night, obviously, the Sixers beat the Nets again.
You uncouth little slime.
Oh, he was doing the Haitian pronunciation. I saw that, Joe.
What did I do?
That's okay. I'm just teasing you.
Anyway, so Embiid had some comments about Vaughn saying that he was begging for calls in game one. And this is how he responded after game two.
Yeah.
After the game last time, they kind of took the Meek Mill swap of begging for free throws and calling, you know, calling out the referees. And, you know, that did come out. And, you know, they got a lot of calls, which I guess is good for them. But, you know, I think we didn't play our best basketball.
Anyway, we don't need this part. Cut it out. We just needed the Nick Nurse part. Awesome. Yeah. I didn't need 45 minutes of all. And could we not have gotten the better audio version of this? Like, it was like 45 minutes long. I couldn't even hear what he said. Basically, he said was... They did the Nick Nurse thing of begging for calls.
The Nick Nurse begging for calls, which is good for them, I guess.
Which is the funniest thing ever, okay? Yeah. I would just like to say, I am all in on Nick Nurse dunks now, okay? He clearly wanted out, and then he was a baby about it and being like, you guys did it, you opened the door. He was a liars who lie in terms of, who started what and how the narrative got out of control. And then he's like, there's nothing more important than playoff experience for this group. They didn't get out of the first round. Yeah. I don't know. Nick Nurse right now, you can dunk on. It's all right. There's no Toronto fans coming to his aid.
His stock has taken a dive.
Nobody's coming to his aid right now. And the thing about Nick has been he has always been such a complainer. Such a complainer. Outrageous complainer. Gets the tomato face on the refs all game long. Yeah. It's just so much. Even there's like certain things where I think Toronto sports fans look at the rest of the world who complains about our guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we go, no, I get it. Like one is bunting diving.
Yes,
it's like
absolutely.
It's like even the most hardcore Leaf fan goes, yeah, he's obviously diving a lot. We're sorry about this. Like, we get why you hate him and all the diving that he does. Nick Nurse complaining to the refs. We get it. It's so annoying. Like,
we get annoyed by it.
We
too.
Get it.
Yeah.
Jose Bautista, if he wasn't our guy, we would understand you hating his guts. We get why Lourdes punched, or sorry, not Lourdes. We get Adore. Why Odor punched him in the face. Like, it's not like, who got punched? Sweet little Jose.
You know, like, no, it happened. Yeah, it was like
Santiago
okay.
Espinal gets punched in the face, and everybody in Toronto's like, so we're going to extradite this person and make sure that they are in front of a tribunal for human rights violations. Jose Bautista got punched in the face, and we were all like, okay. Like, yeah, sorry.
Like, yeah, that was probably, that was brewing for
you.
That.
Yeah, it's fair. So,
brewing.
You can't have your head in the sand too much on this stuff. Anyways, I think that it was a great dunk. The only thing is that Embiid, I will say this, you did remind people that the Raptors beat you in the playoffs and then went and got a championship and that you're still
salty about
that. And you lost, so...
It seems
it's
personal.
A double L.
It's personal between Embiid and Nurse now. And Embiid also had that comment earlier in the year about like they don't even want to win. They just want to lock up the star players and stuff like that.
No, but here's the thing is, well, first of all, everybody does that to Embiid. That's been what they do is it's called the anybody but Embiid strategy. And that's what happens to hardcore stars. And
it's just funny that he mentioned it about the Raptors specifically.
Yeah, but in this series against the Nets where they don't have any bigs who can even remotely stop him, they have to double all the time. And that's leaving shooters open. And it's a beatdown of a series. Everybody knew this was going to be like the Nets. Are the number one fraud that is in the playoffs probably on both sides of the aisle, right? In conference, if you could pick one team to play, it would be the Nets.
It'd be them or Minnesota.
Yeah, that's a fair one, but I would still rather play. I think the Nets would lose to Minnesota in the playoff series.
Well, the Nets got in because of KD and Kyrie.
Yeah.
Nets and Hawks. Those are the two frauds for me.
Yeah, but Hawks, I think, would beat the Nets.
Yeah.
Really? By the way, I saw a Raptor show. They had on my boy Joe Cacciaro, and they were making the case for trading for Trae Young.
Mm-hmm.
And as they were doing it, and Joe was trying to be like, hey, there's only so many guys who could score like this. And I was like, if that happens, I'm done. Like, there's genuinely no way that I'm rooting for the Trae Young team.
Yeah,
like,
no. I'm out on Trae Young. I'm out on Trae Young.
Swore, I was like, there's no what a nightmare that would be. I cannot think of any. Who's the player? This is a good question, actually. Who's the player that you guys would least want to have from another team that's really good? Like, you can't pick someone who sucks. You can't say like, oh, well, I wouldn't want Russell Westbrook. It's like, yeah.
Or like Ben Simmons or something like that.
Because Russell Westbrook just had his best game and he was, you know, 3-19 and they were like, that's his best.
They're trying to fight everyone.
He was great. Yeah, they're trying to fight everyone. Who's the best player that you would want to, because for me, I think it is Trae Young.
Yeah, that's up there. Yeah. Any sport?
Yeah, any sport.
I have always hated Aaron Rodgers. If he ended up kind of Saints somehow.
But he might suck now.
No, I get that. But because, this is like, even like years ago. This is even when he was winning MVPs. I've literally just always hated that guy.
Yeah, and you did have Drew Brees that entire time, though, so it's not really a fair question.
All right, like, back to the drawing board.
It's a fair answer, but it's also like you were one of the most privileged few. Like, right. If you were in any other fan base, essentially, during that time, other than having, like, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, mm-hmm. maybe a little small pocket of time where I had Russell Wilson.
Right.
It's not exactly like any other fan base wouldn't have immediately gone, as much as I hate him, I would take him on my team. Yeah. Like, the question here is, you just would not want him.
There's one glaring one for me, but it's a soccer one. It's Bruno Fernandes from Manchester United.
Mm. Right on.
He's a very good player, but I cannot stand him. Sorry, Austin.
Dude, I definitely know who he is.
I cannot stand him. He's my least favorite player in all sports.
Yeah.
But he's very good.
He's definitely
very annoying.
Yeah.
And he complains about, you want to see Nick Nurse complains about calls?
That's
opposed to Mikel Arteta. Never complain about anything out here.
Top of the league, buddy. Top of the league.
Save it for your podcast now. I like the Rodgers one, though, but I will say this, but because like where he's at right now, my Jets fans buddies. So my longest serving roommate from college, huge Jets fan, has like 20 Jets jerseys, like everything he owns is Jets. Like, loves him to death. I have a few friends who are Jets fans.
Buddy's a Jets fan as well. I'm interested to hear what you're going to say here.
Well, I think they're in a spot right now where, like, they definitely don't want to give up the 13th pick for Rodgers.
Mm. Yes.
And it's very strange because there's no backup plan to this. It's basically, you go back to, like, the Disney Prince, the MILF Hunter.
Yeah.
Or you go to, what, exactly, a trade for someone? Maybe, I actually think that the best outcome would be that they can't get him and then they get back in on Lamar sweepstakes. Like, that would be
interesting.
But it's
seeming more and more like Lamar's going to go back to Baltimore.
Yeah,
well,
if they
OBJ
get Hopkins
thing.
Or whatever. Yeah, no, but it's so weird to me. Anyway, well, that's aside. I'm just saying that I do have Jets fans in my life that are like, yeah, we'll take Rodgers, and yeah, sure, it's fine. But they don't feel like he's coming there to win a Super Bowl.
They're kind of tepid on it, right?
And he's definitely the best guy, and they know they'll make the playoffs, but they don't want to give up the 13th overall pick. But they also don't want – they're just kind of in a – this is not the Aaron Rodgers of old. Like, they're not getting him, especially after the last couple of years of these quarterbacks, like Russ going in a trade and sucking, and Hopkins goes in the trade and sucks. And what happens if things go poorly with Aaron Rodgers in New York? And it doesn't feel like they're not sitting there on their hands and he's like, please make this trade. Please get us Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, that's right. They're kind of lukewarm on it. I was just looking at some stats to get a better answer than Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
And this guy is not a superstar by any means. But I do not enjoy watching Jordan Poole play basketball.
Oh, my goodness.
That would be a tough one.
But Jordan Poole is lesser Trae Young.
Oh, exactly. Oh, yeah.
Like, he's Walmart, he's a worse scorer who can't play defense.
Correct.
I
have the confidence of an absolute superstar. Like, he's like, waving
Trae
off
Young,
Steph.
But Trae Young's an all-star. No doubt about an all-star. Yeah. Guy gets stats no matter what. And I still would be like, no, thank you.
I had someone in the playoffs last year tell me that Jordan Poole was better than Luka, and I had to turn off my phone 48 hours.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's brutal. All right, what else? What else we got?
So Zdeno Chara ran the Boston Marathon.
All right.
He ran it in 3:38, which is apparently a pretty good time.
Where's my Simpson stories?
Your Simpson stories? Do you want to move on to the Simpson stories?
What can I say about Chara? He rode his bike to work every day. Like, how are we surprised that he ran a marathon?
Yeah, well, okay, this is the thing. He's Zdeno Chara. He was a freakish freak.
Super athletic. Played for 20 years.
Athlete. People.
World-class athlete. Does athletics.
Yeah, I'm not surprised you ran a marathon.
I will say, though, that it's like you're in the Boston Marathon, and if I was a runner and I saw Chara, I would go, I know you're a pro athlete, but just because you're so tall, I want to beat you. You know, like, if this is my only thing,
<nine. laughs>
and I've been doing this forever, I would want to beat Chara's time. I could not. There's no chance. Like, I smoked cigarettes for forever, and so, like, there's no, me and Austin, you know, just a little sneaky dart sometimes after the show. So it's like, no way that would ever last for me, but yeah,
my dad just smoked
and
he ran
Ryan
it.
Dempster, who ran it too, like retired athlete so long ago. Like,
yeah, pitcher.
He comes on the station once in a while. Good guy.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. But what's your question about the Chara thing?
Well, the Chara thing is, would you ever be incentivized to try a marathon?
Hell
which
no.
You kind of answered right there,
buddy. Okay, first of all, I wake every time I go to work out. This is me. you don't have to today. You should probably rest. This is not the day for you. I mean, you did, you got some steps, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, I try 35 different ways of convincing myself not to work out. I don't live for it. Like,
At least you still do it.
Yeah, I do, but I would also like to do it more, and I would like to be more regimented with it because I feel so great after exercising. And like you never finish working out and go, man, I shouldn't have done that, like, ever.
Exactly.
It's the best. Working out is the best. You feel better mentally. You sleep better. Like, everything about it is good. And yet, every time I'm about to do it, I go, you know, you could also just get some ice cream tonight and chill because you've been hard. You had a hard day.
Yeah.
You had a hard day, buddy. You watched sports last night late. Mm.
Very difficult.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, I would never do that.
So anyway, moving on to the big story that you want to talk about, the Simpson story.
I thought we had multiple. Yeah, Chara was down the list for me. Very down the list. I have Windhorst and
Simpson stories.
Simpson stories and
Bruce Buffer, baby.
Bruce Buffer.
Bruce Buffer cameo.
Like, I gave you guys like eight of these things that was ahead of Chara, but that's okay. That's fine. You went up to the top of your list and you did your thing again, Jobo, where it's like you hijacked it for your own purposes.
I thought you had Chara. I thought you had Chara in there.
Yeah.
So anyway,
would you run a marathon?
Joe?
What was that?
Yeah, Joe. Would
Joe's
you run
our best chance, like, obviously, in this group.
Yeah, I think I would try it someday if I'm still in shape.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jobo's also our number one, like, biggest confidence guy. He's 22, so it's just like...
There's not much Joe can't do, like, that is true.
Yeah, exactly.
What would I be doing if I said no? Like, why not?
Joe does the thing with false humility where he'll come in and he'll be like, yo, I was doing this thing, I was working out, and there was a young guy that was stronger than me. He's like, I was crazy. And you're like, okay. Yeah, so you're
did
working
I do
out,
that?
You're, yeah, you do stuff. Like, that's always the way you tell stories. It's like, yo, so I was ripping at the gym, and I was like, some guy was like the greatest weightlifter in the world came in there and he roasted me. And I was like, hey, okay, you can still compare yourself to them. Anyways, what's next?
Okay, so Brian Windhorst was, he was doing his get up hit yesterday and he was at a hotel room in Phoenix. And as he was doing it, he was loudly informed to not make as much noise. So on the broadcast, he's like borderline whispering and they asked him about it. And he was like, I was informed loudly that I was making too much noise. And yeah, it was a pretty funny clip. And do you have any like proper hotel etiquette stories about like making noise and stuff like that? Like, do you have anything that really irritates you whenever you're staying at a hotel? Aside from the obvious, obviously.
I'm only starting to get old now. So things are shifting.
That.
No, but things are shifting. Like my whole life at hotels, I'm like, when we're here, we're allowed to party and this is a party room and this comes with the territory. So if I'm up all night and we're playing music or we're doing anything in the room, if you complain, you're the bad guy. Now I'm getting old. I'm starting, like, my opinion is starting to shift. Where it's like, if I'm on a hotel, I might be there for work. And now I want to go. Here's what I will say. If you go to a hotel and it's like spring break and you're in like Fort Lauderdale, there's no rules.
The rules are,
zero 100%. Rules. There's certain times of the year and certain places where you show up and it's like, yeah, you show up in Nashville, they're holding the draft and you're there for a business conference and you're like, why won't anyone go to sleep? Shut up. That's on you. That's all your fault. Get an Airbnb, figure it out. Don't sleep in Nashville. Figure it out. Like, leave the city. But I think that this is just a golden rule situation where you go treat others the way that you would want to be treated.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if you have a night and you're in Montreal and it's a Friday night and you're in a hotel room, you have more leeway. If it's a Tuesday night and you're in Toronto in a business convention center and you're getting wasted and you're like being loud in the hallways, you're a dick. Like, so it's very situationally dependent for me what the hotel rules are. Like, there's no universal
context matters.
Yes, the context matters completely. So in this situation, Windhorst just speaking loudly and someone actually getting upset, that's way too sensitive. Like, I don't care if it's early in the morning. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's late at night. If someone's just doing a hit and talking, you're allowed to talk in your room. He's not playing music loudly.
No, that, he's just doing his get
now
up
you
hit.
Have breached the code of, like, I can hear you. No. That's not a thing that you do. Like, there's things that you do not go and talk to the people in the next hotel room about. Talking too loudly is totally fine. Sex, doesn't matter. They could be having freaky sex. That doesn't matter. That's what they got the hotel room for. That's the real risk you didn't bargain for is, like, people, hammering one out in the other room. It's like, that's their business. Do not invade. You can't be, like, mad at them. But everything else is, there's polite ways of doing it. I think it's just like a neighbor where you can walk over if they're playing music too late and like knocking and going like, hey, hey, can you stop this? And then if they don't, then you call the front desk. You don't do the call the front. That's my rule. Don't call the front
desk.
Don't call
the front
first.
Desk. Yes.
Try to be amicable right at the gate.
Unless, again, this is the caveat here as an old person now. If it's a bunch of youths.
Not the youths.
Oh, it's a bunch of Joes.
And they're a bunch of Jobos that are in that room and they're just, you know, having a party. You know, they're being super loud. and I'm intimidated.
Yeah. See, my fear would be if I knock on the door, they just cook me, and I would never be the same.
Exactly. Like, if it's just a group of young men, I can. You're allowed to put in the secret. Hello, front desk. You're like,
hey, three doors down. Yeah. They're playing.
Can you tell what room this is? I hope not. Is there blocking caller ID?
Can you send someone up, please?
Calls within the hotel room. Yeah.
Don't reveal my name, please.
If it's a bunch of youth and things can step out of control, and you actually think that you're not the best person to de-escalate this, then like that's the move. Yeah. I will say this though, is that generally in my experience from being a youth at one point, is that if you don't deal with the person directly first, then they're just going to be like, wow, now we actually have the green light to be total jerks to you because you called the authority figures.
Yes.
Right. But I also have seen it a million times where someone tries to level with the person and they're just drunk and they're like, it's cool, man. That's it. It's cool.
Yeah,
it's
like,
cool.
Oh, don't worry. Like, don't worry.
I'm saying it's not cool. They're like, it's cool. It's cool. It's like, great.
It's like, I'm informing you that it is not cool.
Exactly. You're not getting anywhere. So it's tough. So, and now you've just put a face to the snitch. So anyway, yeah, that's a tougher one to go. Again, situational. What's next?
Situational. So this clip has been recirculating on Twitter. It was somebody hired Bruce Buffer on Cameo to inform of a breakup. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick a celebrity to do a cameo for you and give a message to a friend, who would it be?
I hate these cameos. I think they're lame as hell.
You think they're lame?
Yeah.
It's so expensive to book Bruce Buffer.
I just, every time people think that they're a good idea, like Ennis got one for his wife for her birthday one year, and it was like a show they watched, 40 Day Fiance. Was it 30 Day, 28?
Oh, it's 90 Day Fiance.
90 Day Fiance.
Yeah. Simon knows it right off the bat.
Simon looked at me like, you stupid idiot. yeah, I think cameos are lame. I just think it's a panic gift move where you think you're doing something that's personal because somebody likes someone, but then you get it and they're actually doing something that's very impersonal because they make thousands of those.
And they're like clearly reading off a paper.
Yeah,
just
and
off
then
the
you
screen.
Get it and it's like, awesome. A person sent me a message that is to a name. Like, I don't know. It's like the new version of giving someone a keychain with their name on it. It's like, this is personal. It's like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
This is lame and you got it last minute.
It's like a cop-out gift. You just do it.
Next.
A man spent 21 hours with a bouquet of flowers begging outside of his ex-girlfriend's place of work in order to win her back. Sat outside from 1 p.m. to 10 a.m. the next day. And it started to rain. He was bare in the cold, but eventually decided to give up. People around him were telling him to get up and just give it up. Yeah. But he would not. Where does this rank among some of the most insane behavior that we've talked about on the show recently?
Low. Because here's the thing. Who among us has not simped in the name of love? You know?
You are correct.
Who among us has not done an embarrassing thing because they had to go over the top for love? You know? Like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, see how silent it got?
Everybody's just like sitting in their seats.
All the losers in here who have simped so hard are just sitting around going like, here's the thing.
What's your simping story?
I tried so hard to forget.
Dude, probably so many, but hold on.
Now we're all going to go home and think about it because you joined.
No, but that's what I'm saying. This is the trust space. This is a safe space for everyone, to share their trauma. But I will say this. When you're like, oh, the tipping, like you have soap on the train. It's like, no, I can't relate to any of those things.
True.
I can relate to, like, I can see a roadmap where that's me, you know? Like, there's a way. There's a way that could have been.
There is a hike. There's a trail where you can get to that point.
21, like, I will say to this guy, 21 hours is way.
It's 1 p.m. to 10 a.m.
I couldn't do that just because, like, I would gas out and I would do. But it's like, 21 hours in terms of, like, simping is nothing. Like, I've simped for months.
Months.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Exactly. Awesome. Months, like.
But, like, one like, action of
that's,
simping
That's what
is.
I mean. Is like, the worst is when some girl is just, like, I've had a girl be, like, break up with you, God knows how many times, and just still, like, every time they're like, all right, actually, maybe we try. And you're just like, all right, I'm fully back in. I'm all the way here. And you try to have this pride in you. There's like a part of you that deep down knows, like, man, I'm probably dead here. But you just keep simping. And like expensive dates, flowers, you know, like whatever they need at their disposal, dropping your own plans. Like, so just for like a morsel, right? Just for like a little piece. Just for a moment.
To like keep
hope.
You convinced that maybe there's still something
and
there.
And so like that to me is where I look at this guy and go, if he saw this as the path, the big gesture, because like you all try to me, my gesture is writing super personal notes that if they ever got revealed to the world, I would.
Oh, I'd go into hiding.
Go underground.
Yeah, no, I'd go into hiding. I would go into a bunker and never be seen like, ever again.
I'll do the full heart reveal. Where I'll be like, do you ever like? Mean to
are
me.
You ever on your phone and you accidentally stumble upon one of them?
No.
I've done that once or twice.
What?
Like talking about this?
What were you saying, Azzo?
This is the most excited I've seen Joe to talk about something. He's like really into this combo.
Joe's a little bit of a lover boy, though. Like, he does have a little bit of lover boy.
You should have seen me during the World Cup. I was on
I'm
fire.
Actually surprised that Joe has done some hard simping at this point. Although you are through the age where puberty, like, because I was going to say.
Yeah, like high school, first couple years of college. Like, yeah, I was, like, I'm 22.
The hardest the hardest simping I have done was in high school, because that's like where
absolutely.
You do.
Absolutely.
Agree.
And with my ex. Two hardest simpings that I've ever done have been with those people.
Mm-hmm. High school, it's always with an ex, isn't it?
What?
It's always with an ex, no?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's always, yeah, because if you're simping in the relationship, then she's going to be your ex someday, probably.
Yeah, that's
and
not.
And then you always do that one last ditch, like lowest that makes you either move on or it's your last ditch effort.
I know, but that's the thing with my ex is that I've had it be like, this is the last time I'll simp.
Okay, this is the last time.
And then there's always like a next level tier down.
This time I mean it.
Yeah.
Like 4 hours
and then there
later,
was always
it's like 2 a.m.
Like, there was always like a next tier down where you're like, man, you suck.
You're going through like the seven layers of hell of simping.
Yeah.
You just like, keep going
yeah,
deeper
there's
and
no,
deeper.
There's no seventh layer. This is like layer 37. chapter 37, oh. The Mole People.
Oh, like, I have accidentally stumbled on like those like last ditch messages, just like if I've been like clearing out my phone and stuff like that, and I like read like the first two lines, I'm like, oh my goodness.
It's okay to love, boys. It's okay to love. Like,
it is okay
but
to
no
love.
Simping is like, yeah, just you know that for me it's usually like you're where you realize how much money you've spent on something and then you go like, oof, or how much emotional time you've given to something.
Yeah.
And that's when you feel like, ah, crap. Like, I am a simp. I'm a loser. I have gone too far.
Hits you at like 3 a.m. one
day. Yeah. No,
you're
yeah.
Like, oh my goodness.
Oh, dude, getting the simping night sweats where you wake up and you're like, oh, I simp too hard.
What am I doing about life? Why would you want to be with a simp like this?
This story makes me think like, how bad did he mess up? Because like the only time I have to simp like this is when I have told a terrible lie and I have been caught in it.
Yeah, that's an awesome.
And then
that's
you need, to,
sense.
You need
out.
To really recover from it.
Dude, you're a liar, eh? I'm not a liar.
Like,
I'm not
that's
saying
you
a word.
Saying that to me.
No, I know, but I'm not. I'm just saying that that's never where I like have gotten into trouble in a relationship is lying. Like
I could see you being too honest, actually.
Yeah, definitely. No, I'm definitely
like,
way
like,
too honest.
Like very honest.
No, I've gotten in trouble with overshares, obviously. And then you're like, whoops. You know, oopsies.
Maybe that was an inside thought.
Yeah, no, that or maybe just play it cool for once. That's the thing is, I always see those old school cool guys that never told their feelings, and I'm like, gotta do anything to be James Dean, where it's just like there's no video of James Dean talking about something. It's always like a cigarette in his mouth because that's the only time he opened it was to hack darts.
What do you mean?
And to drink hard brown liquor.
Yeah.
Or to tell like somebody to shut up.
I want that Austin line. It's a drop that maybe that was an inside thought.
Yeah. No, but so Austin, so that's his fatal flaw, liar. Where do you make the biggest mistakes?
Not letting go.
I'm just
I think.
I've just simped like for those two situations. I just simped because love. Like I was a deep lover, you know, like so much love to give, not because like I screwed something up necessarily.
Mm.
That's my version of simping, is like over love.
I think I delude myself into thinking it's not over.
Yeah, yeah.
I like gaslight myself.
Yeah, that's
I'm
nice.
I'm like, no, I still got a chance.
Yeah, you do.
I don't.
You're 22.
Convincing right. myself.
No, the other two are kind of silent. Simon's married now, so he's like, where's your simping come up?
Yeah, I can't even think of it right now, to be honest.
Oh, okay, fine.
I
Mr.
Perfect. We know the show Simon right. watches.
Oh. He's better than us.
I can't even think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, actually, maybe all of my simping is just all of the reality TV that I watch. That's all it
no,
is.
No, but you love
know?
That
I
now.
Do.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
You're a big love island guy.
Like, maybe, guys, I'm not just super reality TV. I was like, you love it. He's like, I do. I love it.
I'm going to post that as the clip just so people can see Simon's reaction.
That's the clip. All right. A bunch of simps minus Simon. Yes. So it's Simon and the Simps is our new band name.
Oh, that's pretty tough.
That's pretty tough. That's the way that we're going to go out. All right. Subscribe to the podcast. You can always share simping stories with the fellas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. I remember actually last simping thing quickly because it just hit me. I remember my high school girlfriend when we did get together. I won the battle. I finally got there.
You lost the battle.
War.
You won the war.
I lost the battle. I won the war.
There you go.
And then we get to start dating in our senior year. And she kept all the letters I wrote her because I had a crush on her from like grade 9. And then I moved and like came back, had a crush on her again. She kept all the letters.
It's getting worse.
And I remember she kept them in a box and she started reading them to me. And it was one of the worst moments of my entire life.
That just like, kept getting
clearly
worse and worse.
Me just sitting in my room listening to like pop punk emo music, writing her line.
So how old were you when you were listening to them?
Well, I was probably writing her these letters at like 15, 16 range.
So you're like, what, 18, listening to like a 15-year-old?
17, yeah, like a year or two later. And some of them, like, I can still remember where it'd be like, your eyes green as emeralds. It was like, oof, yeah. like I would not care. Nudes get leaked? Don't care. You know, like, nothing in my life could get leaked where I would be more ashamed than...
Love letters?
The love letters from 15 or the simping text I sent to my ex.
If they ever got leaked, you never seen me
those
again.
Those would be the ones where I'd have to be like, hey, I get it. No one ever respects me again. Goodbye.
I'm moving to Arizona, starting a Coyotes podcast.
Yeah, like, I would have to just... I'd be like Edward R. Murrow, or Roger Murrow, where it's like, good night and good luck.
I'll never see you again.
Gone. I'll just be gone. Anyway, subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars, follow, and yeah, go Leafs go.